The opinions expressed in this program reflect only those of the participants and are not necessarily those of the sponsors, management, or staff of WTBQ Radio or FST Broadcasting Corporation. WTBQ.
Good afternoon. This is David Leach, and you are listening to Your Schools. Joining me today is Keith Parsons, the Vice President of the Board of Education here in Warwick. Welcome, Keith.
Thank you, Dr. Leach.
And our focus, as the past three or four programs have been, will be on the reopening of schools. So we are here today. I think it's always important to share the date when we're recording because things are just changing so quickly. It's Saturday, August 1st at about noontime as we record this broadcast to be played Monday at noontime or a little after, 12:05 it starts. We will post this on Facebook, on our district website as well, and hopefully it'll be informative. So again, Keith, I appreciate you being here and just want to provide our community with an update. So we submitted our reopening plan Friday about 5 o'clock to the New York State Education Department. We had an option of asking for an extension. We chose not to, so we can get some feedback, and it'll evolve the plan, but the guiding principles now are set, and I want to encourage all stakeholders to go to our website, visit our website, and you will see sort of a micro site that's been set up called Reopening School, where not only is there more information about the plan, but timeline, latest news, a little bit about how we developed this plan, which we'll talk about at length, I assume, today. And then there's some frequently asked questions. And we keep on adding to those questions. And we're asking parents and other guardians and other stakeholders, when you have a question, you can email the question to us. And we've set up an email address that you'll find on our website called reopening@wvcsd.org. reopening@wvcsd.org. You send us your question. If it's something specific to your child, we may, you know, respond to you personally. But otherwise, if it's an area that folks are asking about, we add it to the frequently asked questions. So Keith, a lot of planning certainly over the past few months here in Warwick Schools.
Well, I don't envy you and your team, but you've done a fantastic job planning for this, and it's been pretty much a moving target the entire time. You know, there was a whole bunch of changes and, you know, originally the date was July 15th, and then it was extended till the 31st, and the guidance documents that have come out a couple of times. And then there's, you know, in true to form, been revisions at the state level that have, you know, caused you guys having to pivot. And the one thing I would think, the one word is flexibility.
Sure.
That, you know, your team has demonstrated and that the community is going to have to demonstrate. And the one thing that I've seen as I read through, you know, the 145-page document that the state put out, and then the Department of Health guiding principles, and the 61 pages that we have here today. Don't worry, I don't think we're going over all 61 pages, everybody. But is the fact that this is a living document, and mm-hmm. in private industry, I hate that term, living document, but it is a document which is going to continually be updated. And it's a document which we're going to have to, you know, continually add to. And a lot of that comes from what you just said is, you know, the questions that parents might be posing. And the best way for them to pose those questions is, you know, by emailing us, not by putting stuff on social media. You know, although we do monitor that, the most direct way for them to get in touch with us is via that email address. Because if it is a situation which, you know, we may not have thought of, or your team may not have thought of, is something that if it's affecting more than, you know, a couple of parents, it's something we'll probably put on the frequently asked questions.
Now, I appreciate you saying that, because when we rely on social media, Facebook, you know, a parent will innocently post a question, someone will respond with not always accurate information, and then it can be certainly tricky. So,
and there's that one website which, you know, I've read and has been updated, you know, and as a parent of three in the district, you know, I value the fact that there is a consistent method and one word and one voice. And I don't think every other school district has done that.
Sure. Well, you know, let me begin by, you know, stating what's the probably obvious to most listeners. And that is, when we started this process, and Keith, you were part of many of those task force meetings,
yes,
along with, you know, teachers, community members, some local physicians, et cetera. We recognized that we were not going to come up with a plan that was going to be a home run with the community, or with the vast majority of the community. Meaning, you know, the bottom line is we were getting early indications that social physical distancing would be a requirement among many other requirements that we'll go over today. And to accomplish that in a school district with 3,600 plus students and all the staff, et cetera, that having every student in every day in the classroom was just not going to be a reality. However, we did set up, I think, some guiding principles that were helpful and informative. You know, for example, we wanted to make sure we provided a safe learning and working environment, that we did provide families with choice. And what I mean by that is in-person instruction with the physical distancing. Now, that's not every day for every student. However, you will not find a comparably sized district in our region, and you'll find very few in the state, that the actual brick and mortar, the school buildings, are open every day with students attending every day outside of a holiday. Also, you'll find that all our kindergartners, all our first graders, all our second graders, that they'll be coming to school every day. And, you know, it was important to us to have that full-time in-person instruction, not only for all kids if we could do it, but certainly for that age group.
Those age groups definitely need it. Having had, and you know, kids go through, you know, kindergarten, first and second, and even a fourth grader last year, you know, that brick and mortar is more important to the younger students than it is to maybe the middle schoolers, and definitely the high schoolers, because they tend to be more adaptable.
Absolutely. We're looking, you know, it was a non-negotiable for us to improve our remote instruction distance learning plan. So sure, last March, we were sort of building it in flight, but now we've had ample time to repair. We'll be doing much more live instruction.
And that is a difference compared to some of the other districts and how they are doing their distance learning. I always joked with everybody that, you know, we did, you know, we kind of wrote the book on distance learning there for a while, having to pivot literally within a week, going from, you know, I was saying to people that I was hoping we can get through to spring break back in March. And, you know, from Monday to Friday, things changed drastically.
And absolutely.
Having to move real quickly, the teachers and the administration and the job they did was great. But building on that is, you know, where we can capitalize and improve our student experience.
Yeah, fortunately, you know, I give our teachers a lot of credit and our families as well in terms of this. We recognize that we have to have a schedule. So if we're going to have remote instruction, there needs to be a schedule. It needs to be as live as it can be. We need to make sure that the assignments that are given and the workload is responsible and there is accountability, but it's not a ton of screen time. So all that's been given strong consideration. And, you know, every, you know, you mentioned other districts, every school district's unique and has, you know, there's certain challenges that they're presented with, that we're all presented with. Here, you know, reopening a closed school, that's a monumental task.
Not an easy thing. Especially because it's not been shut for a year. It's been shut for 10 years, right? It's close to 10 years.
Sure.
So yeah. There's a lot of upgrades and things that, you know, weren't done that are now mandated that need to be taken care of prior to opening.
Absolutely. And so that's Pine Island Elementary School, which we're looking to reopen for our kindergartners. Now, is that ideal for all kindergarten families? No, it's not. It's can be a little farther for some folks than going to their neighborhood school or what we would call their closest school. So the bus ride a little bit longer. I have kindergarten families reaching out to me saying, hey, I want to see the school. What would the day look like? What does the classroom look like? And in all honesty, we're just about ready now to start looking at setting up some classrooms. But why are we waiting? Well, we're taping this Saturday. Last night, which would have been July 31st at about 6-7 o'clock, we opened up our parent portal so that we could start to get information regarding families' choices. So we need to learn who wants to do traditional in school as much as possible, who wants to do remote, who needs the bus. And that's going to dictate some of our, you know, decisions regarding staffing, staff assignments, and many other things. So I think when it's all said and done, I'm confident that our kindergarten families are going to feel great when they see the school. We have John Russo, who's, everybody knows Mr. Russo, who's been a longstanding.
I think he's been a principal in every school we have at one point in time.
Absolutely. He's a great guy. He's very excited about working with our kindergarten families. So he's starting to do some planning. So I think that those families, while maybe not ideal, we are offering kindergarten every day. So that's I think that's a positive. We're doing the same for our first and second graders, who will be back at their respective schools. And then from third through 12th grade, we have the hybrid model. So what differentiates us a little bit with our hybrid model is, while it is every other day, it is a 5 day a week schedule. We're not closing the schools one day a week, or at least, you know, as some of the districts have decided to do for various reasons. So when we return, we'll continue to take a closer look at our reopening plan. This is David Leach, and you're listening to Your Schools.
What does it mean to be a good neighbor? For State Farm, it means helping our customers, because you are our neighbors. State Farm Williams Insurance and Financial Services, Inc. wants you to know they're ready to help. If Williams Insurance and Financial Services, Inc. is your State Farm agent and you're facing financial burdens, call them at 845-986-7100 or visit warwickins.com. After all, now more than ever, being a good neighbor means everything. And like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Summer's here, the perfect time to contact Whitetail Landscaping and Tree Service. Whitetail is a year-round, full-service company based right here in Warwick, New York for over 20 years. Whitetail services include dangerous tree removal, storm damage repair and cleanup, tree pruning, landscape design and installation, and high-end property maintenance. For more information, visit their website at whitetaillandscapeandtreeservice.com. Think local, shop local.
Hi, this is Wild Baby Love. Start your Sunday with me at 6 a.m. and Gospel Tracts. I'll give you the phone number to the Faith phone line and the address to the website. All that and much, much more right here on Gospel Tracts with yours truly, Wild Baby Love.
WTBQ.
Welcome back. This is David Leach, and you are listening to Your Schools. Joining me today is Keith Parsons, the Vice President of the Board of Education, and we are discussing reopening our schools and all the planning that goes in to accomplishing that. Prior to the break, we were just doing a basic intro, if you're just tuning in. We left off talking about reopening Pine Island and that elementary school, and that's not just simply showing up with the keys and a mop. There was quite a bit of work being done. But the school, the bones of the school are fantastic. The rooms look great. And we're excited and think it'll be a very nice start of school for students there. And just a reminder, infection rates have a lot to do with whether school will reopen. And that decision is made by our governor. So our governor is making that decision to reopen schools. I believe he's looking at regional infection rates. Right now in our region, the infection rate is fairly low. Oh, it's a 7 day rolling average, I believe he's looking at. It's fairly low, but I am noticing it start to spike a little bit.
Well, it's coming south to north. So New Jersey's kind of been on the radar a little bit. And I know somebody asked the governor the other day whether or not he would restrict or add New Jersey to the travel restriction list and make that, I guess, state number 32. And he said it would be kind of difficult to go ahead and do that, and we'd work with them. The threshold is, if it's below 5 as a region, schools can open up. If it's above 9, they would be shutting down things as a region.
Interesting. Well, so some of the areas that the plan covers, we'll start with schedules. So they're, you'll notice if you take a look at the plan under the schedule area, that every building schedule will be different than it was in the past. And we'll have broadcasts just specifically on the schedule. But in essence, cohorts were developed and classes were split so that whether it's the hybrid model or even if you're a K through 2 family, it is going to look different. And let me start just in theory. I'll start with the high school in mind. There'll be 4 periods a day at the high school, and they will be what we call block period, block scheduling. So they'll be about 70 to 75 minutes in length.
Which is longer than normal.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is considerably normal than the typical period. So if you think about when we were in school, at least when I was in school, the typical period was about 40 minutes. So there'll be less movement. So if you're a high school student, and let's say you are assigned to the A cohort, you'll have periods one, let's say hypothetically, you'll have your 4 periods on that day in person, 70, 75 minutes. And the following day when you are home, you'll have the same periods meeting again, but now remotely. Then you'll return to school. So let's say Monday, you're in school, you have your four periods. Tuesday, you're home, you're logging into those four classes. Wednesday, you'll have a different four classes.
So the students would still be, in essence, as far as like a parent would be concerned or a student would be concerned, they're still going to have the same number of classes. Those mm-hmm. classes would just be longer in length so that you can minimize contact with other students and teachers within the school.
Absolutely. Class periods will be longer or blocked, scheduled at most grade levels to limit movement as much as possible. And our teachers are working hard to make adjustments to the curriculum and to the expectations. And there's a heavy, so finishing that up. So the days when students are home, they're going to be using technology to log into the classroom, and there'll be a portion of that period. It may not be the entire 75 minutes you're looking at your screen at home on those days when you're home, but you will be logging in. There will be a schedule. Students will be held accountable to that. So that's what it'll look like at the 7 to 12 level, actually. You know, at the elementary levels, we're sticking with the cohort model. You know, the kids will not be traveling as much throughout the building. The class sizes will be about half or even less than half than they were last year, depending.
Yeah, this is one situation where it's easier dealing with the younger children because they don't have to move as much. We always had more flexibility in scheduling it for 7 to 12. Now, for K through 6, it's a lot easier for you guys to figure out because the kids are cohorted and smaller and not in as frequently, and they don't move.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So for your students in grades 3 through 6, it'll be a hybrid model. They'll come in every other day and also have on the days when they're home, there'll be a remote instruction piece that we'll be sharing shortly. It'll look a little bit different than the secondary level, but nevertheless, they'll be interacting with a teacher on those days as well. And then K1 and 2, we've had to basically double our staffing in that area. And there'll be instructional aides helping us and other teachers helping us so that we could accomplish the students in every day.
How is, from a parent's perspective, because I know there was some frustration there with regards to the distance learning, although we did a good job of it, you know, how is it going to be a little bit different structurally while the students are home? For like, not necessarily an older student, like those students tend to do very well remotely. They're much more adaptable mm-hmm. to technology. And the K1 and 2, having them in school is great. I mean, mm-hmm. that's something what you said nobody else is really doing. That 3rd through 8th, you know, on that day that they're home, mm-hmm. in the, you know, what would it look like for, you know, for a third grader?
Yeah, so for grades 3, 4, 5, and 6, when they are home, they will be interacting with a teacher during that time. It may or may not be the teacher they're working with daily. So we have staff, let's say, for example, what we would call academic intervention service providers, or parents may refer to as a reading teacher. We may be reassigning that staff to help with the hybrid model. So that staff will be available on the days when students are home, and they'll be setting up a schedule where they'll be interacting with your children at home. So there'll be a little bit less contact time than it would be when they're in school, obviously. But there's an actual adult that they'll be interacting with, going over curriculum, really going over the core, reading, you know, writing, mathematics, et cetera, to keep the momentum going so they're prepared for the next day and et cetera, et cetera.
So in essence, just trying to make it as seamless as possible and literally just changing what seat the student is sitting in, whether it's at home or whether it's at school.
Exactly. And not about just posting a bunch of work to do, but
making it worthwhile work.
Yeah. Making it a lot more meaningful, but not in front of a screen all day as well. So those teachers that I'm referring to, the reading teachers and other staff, they'll be closely collaborating with the classroom teachers to keep the momentum moving forward so the students don't miss out on those opportunities. You know, and then moving over to, you know, health checks, I thought that'd be a good topic to talk about. So obviously this plan is heavy on health and safety. And our staff is going to be completing electronic health checks, you know, each morning forms. And we're going to be monitoring and helping them in that area. But we're also going to be asking parents to do the same. So we'll be providing some information soon where we're asking parents daily to let us know to check their child's temperature and to attest to any symptoms each morning so that we can stay on top of that. And it's a more of an electronic health form. But also at our schools, the school entrances are being equipped with walk-through temperature screening devices that can read students' temperatures about 70 students a minute. Yeah, so that's a different egress, different entry points throughout the buildings.
That's, you know, in essence, something that I had never thought about when you guys brought that up. But I mean, just in terms of, you know, because one of the things they are suggesting is, you know, physical distancing is not just physical distancing in a classroom. It's physical distancing, walking through a hallway, getting into school, staggering kids off buses, and being able to handle that. I mean, I've had my temperature checked, you know, more times than I would want to in the past month. And, you know, it takes, you know, maybe 10, 15 seconds. Well, picture that times 1,000 or 500 students in the middle school or 600, 700, even at half capacity. That takes a lot of time. And being able to have those type of those readers there, you know, are great.
Absolutely. So that's sort of the latest and greatest technology. If you're thinking about when you walk through those little scanners at an airport, it somewhat resembles that. It's there's models that are based on the age of the child, based on their height. So the one at Pond Island will look a little different than the one at the high school for that reason, but they'll be installed shortly.
But I mean, as far as that's concerned, you know, everything is based upon one thing, is the health and safety of everything, of everyone. And you're, you know, it's kind of like you're only as good as your weakest link, you know, and I know that I've probably been guilty of it. I know my mom was when she sent me to school with a runny nose and a, you know, lowered temperature via Tylenol. That is something which parents are going to have to be vigilant about and not be afraid to keep their kids home. And a teacher is not going to have to be afraid about calling out sick if, in fact, they don't feel well or are exhibiting symptoms. Because if one of those people, and we're all out in the community, and you're out in Walmart, and you're out in, you know, shopping for food, or even at a park, you know, taking a walk, if you somehow were to contract, you know, COVID-19 and start exhibiting symptoms, you need to basically pull yourself out of being in contact with everybody else. And, you know, if somebody were to walk in, then all of a sudden, all of this work and the ability for everybody to go back to school might be limited at that point in time.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, that'll segue us into a topic where we continue to receive many inquiries. So, and that's on the idea, a requirement of masks.
That's a good segue into masks. I don't know about you, but you know, you can always tell when someone's smiling under their mask because their cheeks are, you know, puffed up because people are happy to see someone else other than the five people that they live with.
Yeah, and it's becoming, you know, trendy in terms of designs and
well, you know. I mean, maybe it's a good time to start talking about masks and just PPE in general, because, you know, one of the things that, you know, is out there is parents do need to supply their kids with masks. Kids need to have masks if they are taking buses. They need to have masks, correct me if I'm wrong, while walking through the hallways. Basically, it's almost like the same as going out to dinner nowadays, at least in the state of New York. You can't eat inside in the state of New Jersey. But when you go into a restaurant, you have to have your mask on. When you can sit at your desk, you can take your mask off, correct?
Well, that's a good question. So the original guidance we got was yes.
They changed. It's a living document.
It's a living document. So the state of New York's guidance was a little, it seemed a little more liberal in that area than in terms of what we're receiving now. So from the Department of Health. So we're still figuring that out. So here's what I can tell you. Masks will be worn by employees and students for the most part at all times. That's going to be a requirement. Now, staff will direct students when they can take mask breaks. Masks will be provided if students need them, but we are asking students to bring in their own masks. Now, if you need it, we'll have it. If staff member needs it, we'll have it. But we are encouraging folks to bring their own mask. And, you know, and we are also encouraging parents to check the fittings on the mask for proper protection. And maybe work with a healthcare professional with that if they need support. And of course,
and there is a way that they have to fit, right? They have to go over the nose and under the chin, right?
Absolutely. So we're going to be providing more guidance soon regarding masks. But our most recent conversations with the Department of Health here, and what it looks like, some changing guidance that's going to come out, that you know, we've got to all work together on this, you know, and we're not going to be looking to close school down. If there is one case of COVID, the building's not going to shut down. We're going to be doing some pretty extensive contact tracing, et cetera. So when we return, we'll continue with this discussion. Thanks for tuning in. This is David Leach, and you are listening to Your Schools.
You have big dreams, big ideas, big kids. Wait, when did they get so big? You have big plans, big things to do, so we built you a bigger Subaru. Subaru listened and delivered the perfect SUV to accommodate everyone and everything in the new three-row 2020 Subaru Ascent. The Subaru brand was awarded the 2020 KBB 5-Year Cost to Own Award. With an EPA estimated highway fuel economy of 27 miles per gallon for 2020 Subaru Ascent and Ascent Premium models with standard equipment. Actual mileage may vary. Visit us online at waynesubaru.com to schedule your showroom visit today.
When your computer goes down, ask anyone in town, and they'll say,
I know a guy.
The computer guy.
Need a new monitor or a new mouse, or you don't have the right cables or adapters around your house?
I know a guy.
The computer guy.
Got a virus or slow booting up? Could be a problem, or just a hiccup.
I know a guy.
The computer guy.
It's their knowledge and experience that makes them great. Call the computer guy at 988-0708 in Warwick, Florida and Goshen. Not just a name, a solution.
I know a guy. The computer guy.
Tune in every Saturday at 11 a.m. for Free Speech with Stephen Kattar and Jay Westerveld, where you can voice your opinion, express your ideas, comment, or make suggestions on the topic du jour, right here on Radio Worth Listening to.
WTBQ Weather.
Warm and humid with sun and clouds. High near 90 this afternoon. Tonight turning cloudier with scattered showers and storms after midnight, 70 to 75. Tuesday, cloudy, turning windy with periods of heavy rain throughout the day as our tropical system comes up the coast. Rainfall amounts could exceed 4 inches in spots and gusts as high as 50 to 55 miles per hour, highs in the upper 70s, and this all tapers in the evening, lows around 70. From the WTBQ Weather Center, I'm WeatherWorks meteorologist Michael Prianti.
The opinions expressed in this program reflect only those of the participants and are not necessarily those of the sponsors, management, or staff of WTBQ Radio or FST Broadcasting Corporation. WTBQ.
Welcome back. This is David Leach, and you are listening to Your Schools. We are taping this broadcast today, Saturday, August 1st. I only share that with you because you never know what could change between Saturday and Monday. Joining me today is Mr. Keith Parsons, the Vice President of the Board of Education, and we are discussing the reopening of our schools. If you're just tuning in, check out our website. We have I'll call it a little microsite called Reopening Our Schools, and from frequently asked questions to more information about the plan, which was submitted to the New York State Education Department and the health departments Friday. And as Keith has, I think, reminded us, and it's an excellent point, it is a living document. It will probably look different on September 1st than it does on August 1st. But nevertheless, the bones of the plan are there for you to check out. We were just discussing.
We're just talking about PPE and masks and all the other fun stuff associated with, you know, being semi-close to somebody.
Yeah, and the advice, you know, the guidance we're getting from the health department now is the importance of masks. And, hey, listen, we're educators. I get it. You know, I'm in kindergarten classrooms all the time, and I have the same question that parents have on their mind. Like, how is a 4 or 5-year-old going to keep the mask on? And, you know, those types of things. So we're going to have to work those out. But the physical distancing and the mask are a very important part of all our plans, and if we fail to follow that guidance, it's going to likely make it more difficult for us to stay open.
Exactly.
And for contact tracing.
Yeah, you were talking about contact tracing before the break and talking about, you know, it's almost like you're only as good as your weakest link. And if something were to happen, you had actually touched on the fact that a lot of people maybe don't think about is that if you have one case, we might not be shutting down school.
Yeah.
How is that, you know, going to look from a parent? Because, you know, as a parent, they're going to be like, well, what if this kid has a case of something? Or what if, you know, there's 5 cases? Or what's the threshold, I guess, that, you know, we would be reevaluating whether or not to keep school open?
Yeah, it's going to be a partnership. So if you think back to last March, there were districts that were closing based on the contact of a contact of a contact, right? So it was crazy. I'd wake up in the morning or late at night. I'd be getting phone calls, looking at emails and saying, okay, what do we do here? You know, a student was over another student's house whose cousin was there the day before and tested positive. So what do we do? So we're going to be more strategic this time.
And the cohorts will help that.
They will help that. In terms of contact tracing, if a child or staff member who is present in school has a confirmed case, we're going to work with the Department of Health because the Department of Health will be important for us. We're going to notify them immediately, either myself or a school nurse or physician will follow the specific notification procedures that must be taken as indicated by our local Department of Health. But of course, while maintaining confidentiality in accordance with FERPA and HIPAA and the American Disabilities Act. So we're not going to be giving identifying information out, but we are going to be doing contact tracing, which is a function of the Department of Health to trace all contacts with confirmed cases in our region, with COVID-19 confirmed cases. So the district will support the Department of Health with the accurate attendance records, the logs of employees. So we're going to have logs in classrooms and buildings of any visitors, which would be pretty limited.
I was going to say, I read last night, there's really no reason for people to be visiting the building right now.
Oh, really, it's pretty limited. Yeah. Absolutely, has to be. And then we're going to be assisting the Department of Health in tracing all contacts. So in the event a student or staff member is sick or asymptomatic, notification to exposed students or individuals, faculty will occur pursuant to the contact tracing protocols that are designated by our Department of Health. So the district will not necessarily notify the broader community unless we're directed to do so by health officials. So, you know, I can imagine, rumors circulating, let's say, on social media. Hey, I heard this student went home early with a temperature. You know, we're not going to be addressing those kind of rumors. We're not going to be identifying who specifically is sick, but we are going to be strategic with our contact tracing, which is the reason for the cohorting models you were just saying.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, you know, I think there needs to be a certain trust here within the district, you know, due to the health and safety of everybody, from the bus drivers to the custodians to the students to the staff. You know, you never want to put anybody at risk in any way, shape, or form. If there is a reason to be alarmed, or if there is a reason for people to be notified because somebody has tested positive, kid could have went home with a stomach ache. Yeah, I mean, there's a variety of reasons, and sometimes things tend to, you know, take on a life of their own on social media and other platforms out there. If there is a reason for people to be notified, they will be notified.
Absolutely. So that's an important, I think, distinction from the spring, that we are going to be pretty strategic, surgical in terms of how we go about that. Now, of course, if it becomes a situation where the infection rate is either high in the local community or in the region, or there could be a situation where we're closing a building, let's say, or a wing of a building. So a lot of that information is on our website. You folks can check it out. Also under the frequently asked questions of the reopening plan. But, you know, moving on to, you know, transportation for a moment. So again, Friday, July 31st, form goes out to families asking them, what is your choice? Whether it's remote instruction, which you're going to commit to for the first semester, which gets you into late January, or you're going to come in to the traditional brick and mortar. Then there's also another question about transportation. And we really need to gauge who plans on using transportation. And it can't really, we would prefer it not being a fluid situation where someone's plans are frequently changing. We really have to commit, because it's our goal to, whether it's loading, seating, unloading buses, to have strong physical distancing in place on those buses. And we are going to be reducing the maximum occupancy on those buses significantly compared to previous years. You know, as of, there was some clarification recently from the
state
Department of Health, the transportation, they indicated that students on a school bus, they must wear a face mask and they should physically distance or socially distance to the extent practicable. So,
well, there's a lot of interpretation to the extent practicable.
There is.
And even certain things just come to mind. Like if you're on a bus, what happens? The first person on the bus should take the last seat in the bus.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like those type of procedures I can assume are being put in place. You don't want the first person to sit in the first seat in the bus and then have 10, 20, 15, you know, however many people are on that bus pass that person. The whole point is put that person as far away from everybody else and stagger them getting on and stagger them getting off.
Absolutely. I mean, we upon receipt of getting these student learning enrollment forms last night, and we really encourage you to fill those out as soon as you can so we can make some of these decisions, so we can begin our routing, so we can get you that information for those that are going to take advantage. We're looking at a few. First of all, parents of younger grade students are going to be asked to assist in the physical distancing at bus stops and during drop-off and pickup. Buses will load from the back to the front. And it was funny, my father read an article in the Record where I'm quoted, and he was very upset. He goes, David, he said, you're going to open up the back of the bus and load kids from coming from the back door of the bus. And I had to explain that, no, that's not what we intend. When we say bus will load from the back to the front, we don't mean literally.
Well, you watch, new buses will have side entrances. You know, when they start manufacturing these things, they'll be like, oh, we're going to put a side entrance in now, like our big bus. But, I get it. The whole point is keep them as far away from, each other as possible. And part of that is, like you said, don't have kids on top of each other, even at bus stops.
Absolutely.
While parents are waiting there.
Students may only ride their assigned bus this year. So we're not going to be, looking for, unfortunately, play dates and that kind of thing. We just can't accommodate. Changing their assigned bus or riding another bus is going to be prohibited. Again, we're looking to route these buses with 30% less capacity than in the past. So will they bus stop? Will they bus have 8 students on it? Well, I sure hope not. Well, that may be a nice thing to do. We just can't. That's not something we're going to be able to swing.
But it's all going to depend upon who opts in for busing versus what grade they're in. It's a whole bunch of contingencies right now that are up in the air, which is why everybody needs to get those forms in.
Absolutely.
You're going to be chasing down some people, I have a feeling.
I think we probably will have to do that. At the high school and the middle school, pickup times will begin about 6:40 a.m., and there's going to be staggered drop-off, which will begin at 7:15 a.m. at the school. So we're not going to let the buses just sit there parked with kids on them. We've got plans. They're going to use different entrances to the buildings. It's going to be staggered drop-off. At the elementary, the pickup times are going to be about 7:50 a.m., 10 minutes to 8. Again, staggered drop-off at the school. Parents are encouraged to transport their children to and from school if they can. We recognize that that's going to be part of our plan in order to be able to reduce capacity. I was interviewed by the Times Hill Record recently regarding transportation, and I said, hey, the number one challenge is human capital. It's people. It's bus drivers. We don't.
Exactly. And bus drivers are very difficult to get, and they're always they're extremely valuable. And even right now, with the way the DMV is set up, if you can even get in, a lot of new people who want to be bus drivers may not be able to get the proper licensing yet.
Yeah, it takes some time, that's for sure. We want to have some drivers in the bullpen. We don't have the number of buses available and probably even a bigger issue, drivers, just to start going out and just putting just a handful of kids on each bus. But we will do physical distancing, and there certainly will be significantly fewer students on the bus.
But what I'm hearing right now is just from the time when the kid is standing at the bus stop to the time when the kid is getting into their individual classroom, at least from a K-6 perspective, or even probably 7, it's going to be an extremely regimented process. From a student's perspective, I'm going to be socially distanced at the bus stop. I'm going to get on the bus, and I'm going to take the next available seat towards the back of the bus. When my bus gets to school, I'm not going to sit on it anymore, which has always been a sticking point for a lot of people.
Sure.
I'm going to get off, and I'm going to go through a color-coded or a numbered door that is assigned to me, and I'm going to go right into my classroom. And I'm going to basically stay there for as long as possible, depending upon how my class schedule is. And then we can get into lunch and all the other.
Absolutely. I think that's well said. Bell times will be a little different. In order for us to stagger arrival, in order for us to have an orderly dismissal, but to have physical distancing, we're going to be shortening the days up a little bit. Now, no, we're not. There's districts all around the state that are doing half days every day and that kind of thing. Or split
that would
schedules.
Just add to your transportation costs and resources.
Absolutely. We're not doing that. But at the high school, the day will start at about 7:40 a.m. and conclude about 1:40 p.m. And those buses rolling out probably closer to 2. At the elementary level, the day is more or less 9 to 3 or 8:55 a.m. to 2:55 p.m. And actually, and just to give the public a glimpse into that type of planning, you know, there's a lot to consider. So bus drivers have work certain hours, they have certain schedules. So that's why you'll see us sort of be in concert in terms of
there's a lot of balls in the air right now. And it's like they can't land and you can't decide what to do until everybody decides whether or not they are, one, coming to school, or they're going to opt in for a remote learning, or two, you know, whether they're going to take the bus or not. I mean, those are the two main questions.
Right? Absolutely. Well, when we return, we'll continue discussing the restart of Warwick Schools. This is David Leach, and you are listening to Your Schools. WTBQ. Welcome back. This is David Leach, and you're listening to Your Schools. Joining me today, Keith Parsons, Vice President of the Board of Education here in the Warwick Valley Central School District. And we are discussing our reopening plan as we look to restart schools for this September. Yeah, if you're just tuning in, you know, some of the basics, we are waiting to hear from the governor. He will make a decision on whether New York schools will, how they'll restart, whether we can move ahead with our plan to have in-person instruction or not. I believe he's basing that decision on the infection rate throughout the state and even by region. So we'll learn more, I believe, the first week of August, which we are now in.
Which is next week.
Which is, yeah. So we should, and again, for those tuning in, we're recording here on a Saturday midday. We only mention that because who knows what could change between now and the airing of this broadcast.
This might be invalid by Monday morning.
It might be. It might be. Yeah, a lot going into, again, the district students in K through 2 will be coming to school daily, Monday to Friday. Pine Island Elementary School will be a kindergarten center. Grades 1 and 2, you'll go, students will report to their respective schools, either Sanfordville Elementary School or Park. Grades 3 through 6 will be on the hybrid model. They'll come to school every other day. When with their off day, meaning the day they're not in school, there will be a remote instruction taking place, and as well as the same model through similar model for 7 through 12, where they'll be on a hybrid model, and whether they're in school and block scheduling, only 4 classes a day, but they're longer, they're going to be 70-75 minute periods.
And the students will still have the same amount of classes. They will just be more spread out over a variety of days. And let's take this to the positive, right? Mm-hmm. If the numbers continue to go down, or, you know, maybe there's some therapeutic areas, you know, some therapeutics come out, you know, we may add more days back if we may not have to socially distance. Would that be correct? This could transition back. You know, we always talk about and thinking about the transition to remote learning again, like full time for everybody, but sure, it could flip the other way too if things were to go for the positive.
I think so. I mean, our planning is, you know, we sort of plan for the worst. And so we recognize, hey, is there a likelihood that we could have a second wave coming in the fall and October? That's what physicians are telling me that they're anticipating. So we're trying to beef up significantly. We have strengthened our distance learning plan because of that. But yes, absolutely. Could we pivot the other way? And, you know, would I love to move into, you know, the springtime and toward the, you know, the second semester and have it look a little bit more like
September of 2019?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I mean, you know, it's funny because, you know, here we think summers usually feel long. This summer has felt especially long because most of the kids have been home since, you know, March 13th, you know, and as we're talking about, you know, re-entering school, it's like, yay, you know, get the kids back and get some, you know, resemblance of normalcy. But, you know, it could go, you know, either way. And I think we're in a better spot as a district from a distance learning perspective than anybody else. You know, you touched on Pine Island. One of the things that sticks in my mind as a parent is, and I was talking to Sharon, who's our board president, the other day about this, we would not have been able to pull off distance learning 5 to 7 years ago. We didn't have the infrastructure for it. We didn't have the bandwidth. We didn't have the Chromebooks. We didn't have, you know, so at least from a hardware or a technology perspective, we were in a good spot back in March.
Yeah, absolutely. And what we're working on now is trying to improve the internet speed and reliability in Warwick and in Pine Island. So We're actually, we've had some parents reach out to us concerned about connectivity in the Pine Island area. So
yeah, I know there's no cell signal out there. It's kind of tough.
It's tough.
I know we're talking two different technologies, but one is usually contingent on the other.
So we're optimistic that there'll be some improvements there from the conversations that we're having with the providers. So that's good. But also this summer, part of our planning with our infrastructure is not just the classroom and not just Pine Island. We're enhancing our outdoor classrooms. So whether you're at Park, where we're going to have a few new outdoor classrooms, whether we have one new one on village property, we're about to get approval, another on the actual Park School property. We'll have a tent that'll be there that students, a very, very large tent that students will be accessing throughout the day. So we're looking to get them out, especially in the fall and the spring.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great option. I mean, I remember the one time one of my teachers actually used class outside. It was one time, and I still remember it. I think I was in like second grade at the time. You know, this could be a great experience. And when you think about it, you know, if you're not using it, and I know this is just a touch point, but if the kids are eating, you know, in their own individual classrooms, mm-hmm. you still have a cafeteria that you could use as an alternate site. You know what I mean? You can set up classrooms and distance kids in there. Depending upon how gym class works, you can do things in the gym. You know, there's a lot of flexibility, you know, within, you know, how we can structure students coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. Getting them outside as much as possible is part of our plan as well.
Yeah, and the state actually talks about open windows, right? Then the state says get as much fresh air in the buildings as possible.
Absolutely, it does. And, you know, we're optimistic about that. We think that folks are going to like the new enhanced outdoor classroom spaces. So we're actually going to be putting out a press release on Monday with some photographs of what those spaces look like and what you can students can anticipate seeing. A lot of effort and emphasis is being put into the facilities area and particularly into hygiene, into cleaning. So
it's going to look different when the kids go to school as far as like what bathrooms you can use and having hand sanitizer available. And like Dr. Leach touched on was the masks. You know, masks are just one portion of it. And, you know, one of the things I believe in our document is the fact that basically any access to the building after 6 o'clock at night is going to be shut down so the building can be sanitized and cleaned thoroughly, or all of the buildings can be, correct?
Absolutely. We're going to do deep cleaning daily. So I don't want folks to be alarmed. You know, there's, I think the other, just about every other district near our size in the region is going to be shutting down one day a week to do the deep cleaning. We're going to do deep cleaning, among other things, I'm sure, in their plans, but we're going to be doing the deep cleaning daily. We feel that we really have no choice. So that should be understood. And then in terms of ventilation, we're putting a lot of emphasis there as well. So there's modifications to the building management systems to allow more fresh air coming in and to introduce more outdoor air. Our air handling systems, you know, they've been inspected to function at functioning with higher MERV rated filters, the minimum efficiency reporting.
I was going to say, I don't know what MERV means.
Yeah, so we're looking to do that. We are doing that. Spaces where fresh air is limited due to the original building structure or systems, we're introducing fresh air either the old school way of, no pun intended, of opening windows and doors. We have options for replacement and modification of existing systems here and there. We're making some enhancements. I know we're looking at some of the nurses' rooms and making sure that the ventilation makes sense where that air is returning. Fan motor speeds are going to be increased where applicable to ensure the volume and flow. We're doing more frequent maintenance and inspection of the systems to mitigate any extra strain on them. The filter replacement schedules are going to be much, much more frequent. So I just wanted to address that because that is a question that folks have asked me regarding ventilation and how we're going to increase fresh air ventilation rate to the extent possible to aid in maintaining really a healthy indoor air quality. So when we can't get outside, that we have that in place. So a lot to certainly digest.
There is a lot to digest, but you know, as I sit back and I listen to you, and after I've read the document, and as a parent, you know, I feel confident in sending my kids back. And you know, I think that you know, the enhancements and the changes that have been made, you know, have taken the state plan and you know, kind of plussed it. You know, like Disney always says, plus it.
Right.
You know, when you start looking at what we're actually doing, I feel confident that we're ready to welcome those kids back, as well as the staff, from, you know, from getting on the bus to getting off the bus.
Absolutely. And regarding staff,
if they take the bus
and they don't have to. And working with staff too, you know, all the research that I'm seeing and opinions being conveyed from medical professionals is that the infection rate's much higher for adults than it is for young children. And the idea of young children, the infection rate being pretty low, and the odds of them spreading the virus to adults being less than adult to adult. So that's promising. But nevertheless, we do have staff who have probably, like any other organization, have some health concerns. So we're making accommodations for our staff, which could be from, you know, not the what you would assume them to be, to you know, masks, to guards, to distancing their desks further away, and working with their medical doctors and our physicians and et cetera. So that could be a little complicated from a human resource end, but we are committed to our staff returning and returning safely and making sure we have reasonable accommodations in for them. So there's a lot of moving parts again.
Well, it gets down to protecting everybody, protecting the students, protecting your staff, you know, because as much as you like to say, you know, if bus drivers were to get sick, then you can't get the kids to school. Then that's a tough one to do. You know, if a lot of your teachers were to get infected, or, you know, because keep in mind, when September comes around, I don't know of any teacher that doesn't get a cold.
Oh,
you know, you were a teacher for many sure. years. You know, everybody comes back together. Everybody winds up with the sniffles. Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be COVID, you know, and as you move and as you think, that's how things tend to go. Because then what that usually goes into is cold and flu season. And to your point before, that a lot of physicians are concerned that there's going to be a resurgence. I think there is going to be a heightened sense. There's going to be a heightened sensitivity where most people would think, oh, I just have a cold. Or most people would think, oh, I probably just got a touch of the flu. That now could, you know, manifest itself into something else. People just need to be prudent and responsible when it comes to either interacting with other people or sending their kids to school.
You know, and speaking of coming to school, the food service program is certainly an important one. Nutrition. Want to talk about that very quickly. We have about a minute left.
Yeah.
All right. So we are going to be asking those who are attending in-person instruction we're not looking to accept cash daily. Meals can be paid by opening an online account with myschoolbucks.com or mailing a check to the food service department. This information is online, but I want to get that on folks' radar as they may want to start considering that. And, you know, we are really putting a lot of effort into exactly where the students are eating. So no, we will not be opening up a cafeteria and having 300 students sitting.
And so, parents are going to be encouraged, as I read, to send their kids to school with lunch, because there will also be limited access to different types of food.
Yes.
They'll be limited depending upon the grade level.
There will be. The older the student, the more options there'll be, but they will not be as, you know, as robust as maybe in the past. So, and we're going to have kiosks set up in the schools, particularly the larger schools, where students can report to get their breakfast and lunch options rather than, you know, the unit lunch concept where everyone's just eating together. And that's unfortunate. You know, there's certainly some cons to opening up in this environment, but nevertheless, we are committed to opening up. And we're looking forward to seeing our students again. Again, I want to encourage everyone, you have a question, check out our website. The reopening plan is on the website. There's a frequently asked questions section that has a lot of information. And if your question is not answered there, please email us. You'll see the email address on the site at reopening@wvcsd.org to send your questions. And we'd be happy to do our best to answer them. That's the best address to use. The website's the best tooled where you can get information from.
And that website is warwickvalleyschools.com, right?
There you go, warwickvalleyschools.com.
Taylor always reminds me of that.
There you go. Well, Keith, thanks so much for being here with me today.
Great.
I appreciate it. Until next time, this is David Leach, and you have been listening to Your Schools. Bye now.